Hello there, and welcome to the latest edition of the Digital Foundry Direct Q&A show. You've got Q's, we've got A's. I'm not sure that came out correctly, but either way, joining me on the panel, first of all, John Linneman, hello.
I have a Q for you, Rich. What's the latest on Count Binface?
I have heard that he does have an endorsement from Lord Bucketface.
It's
a crucial pivot in the British political scene. Also joining me, it's Oliver McKenzie. Hello.
Yes, I do enjoy being kept abreast of the latest UK political developments on this podcast, at least in the opening phases of these podcasts, and I'm looking forward to future updates.
Okay, good. I guess we should just get on with the questions. Okay, then. So in the wake of the Xbox reset, obviously there's a lot of people out there with a lot of questions and a lot of concerns. And we're going to kick off with this question from Will Cooling. Something I don't get about Project Helix. If Microsoft makes so much money from the license fees they receive from third-party game sales, why are they building a console that will allow people to access their Steam library? Won't that just encourage developers to not develop Xbox SKUs to avoid paying the fee? Likewise, if Minecraft, Candy Crush, and Call of Duty are the model they want to follow, why even bother releasing a new console? So, Oliver, I'm going to go to you first on this one, because here's the thing, right? We've got basically new management that's come in. They've pressed the giant big red reset button. Therefore, all of the stuff we can kind of like took as read from what Phil Spencer and Sarah Bond were saying, well, we can't actually accept that it's probably the route forward at this point. So as we understood it, the issue with Project Helix, or rather the plan with Project Helix, the strategy, if you will, was basically for Xbox to fully embrace PC, to become a PC effectively, include the Xbox and enhance the Xbox ecosystem, but basically make it a machine for the ages, so to speak, with, you know, a fully open system. Now, with everything we've heard from Asha Sharma, do you think that is still the strategy? Because I don't.
Yeah, I honestly don't think they totally have a coherent vision, at least not one that survives between administrations, as to what right. The next generation Xbox is going to look like. Because the old vision for the next generation Xbox was basically, in my view, right, whether this is fair or not, I'll leave to the viewer to decide. But in my view, it was basically a pulling out of the console business, where they were shipping a high-end next-generation PC platform. Maybe they're going to ship some supplementary devices down the line, maybe lower-end platforms. But the initial emphasis was on a very high-end system. And that high-end system would basically run and play PC games. It would be fully open. You could run the Xbox Store in it. You could run the Epic Games Store in it. You could run the Steam Store in it, famously. You know, it would be a complete multi-platform jack-of-all-trades PC box designed around the, next-generation Windows interface for Xbox. And I'm not totally sure that's the vision at the moment, because Asha Sharma in a recent interview indicated that the idea that the box would run Steam was maybe something that was not decided or not fully confirmed. The emphasis is on affordability. Asha Sharma keeps talking about saving the Xbox, and they're actually going back and, you know, she committed to shipping new updates for Xbox Series consoles. I think every 2 weeks she's talking about having a renewed emphasis on Xbox Series consoles, which is kind of curious, because, like, I thought that was the old model. I thought that was the I thought that was the vision of Xbox that was going the way of the dodo. You know, I thought we were embracing the new wonderful PC $2,000 vision of the Xbox. I didn't know that we were going back to that vision of the Xbox. So I really do think she values the platform. And I think something that was lost possibly in the transition to the next generation Xbox system is the idea that, do we want to give up the platform forever? Because fundamentally, if you're shipping a Steam box on PC, you are giving up the platform forever. And there's so much money in being a platform holder. And that is something that I think once you give it up, it's gone forever. So I don't totally know what the next generation Xbox is going to look like. I think it might be a more locked down PC box. I don't know, but there's a bit of whiplash here, because what we're seeing between Xbox administrations, between CEOs, between management, is a complete reversal on all the things seemingly that made Helix what Helix is, right? I think they want a complete 180 on a lot of these aspects. And I don't know that we're in a stage of the development process for that console that some of these things can be taken back, you know, especially if it's launching in 2027. I think some of these things are set in stone, and they might have to live with it, but they're going to try to find ways around it. Like, maybe you'll be able to finance it off Klarna or something. They certainly have some, you know, buy now, pay later things, and who knows how that will work out. And maybe they do block third-party storefronts. I don't know, but perhaps some of those details are being worked out at the moment.
It would be incredible if the innovative way to get Helix into more people's hands is basically Klarna. that would be just remarkable. John, what do you make of this? Because, you know, basically that has been the long-standing argument against this concept of Helix as an open platform. It's like, well, actually, they make money from their licensing fees. I think, you know, going back to what Sarah Bond and Phil Spencer were talking about, I think they were not going to subsidize the hardware. Therefore, it didn't matter whether, if they lost those licensing fees or not, to a certain extent. They would become a store just like Steam, just like Epic Game Store. What do you think is the future now, based on everything that's happened?
Yeah, I mean, none of this stuff is obviously officially confirmed, but it does feel like the original idea was to essentially turn the Windows or into its own central platform that was both for PC and console, with like a sort of more streamlined Xbox focused experience. I mean, we've heard this directly from them, that Windows was a huge problem for them, right? And they really wanted to focus on making something that would solve that. And I think that's what they wanted to do with Helix. And a byproduct of this focus was that it would open it up like a PC. So you'd have more of a PC-like device. They'd remove the subsidies, as the subsidized model was not working for them. And that's, you know, kind of the vision. But it does seem like everything that's being said by the current leadership, maybe that's not what they want to do. But as you noted, it's like walking stuff back while consoles at this point in development. Curious to see what that means. And if we end up with something where it's like, hey, the original Windows based stuff is kind of there, but we're just going to put big limits on it now, that kind of sucks. You know what I mean? Because then it just turns it back into what the Xbox was, which they've struggled with. And possibly with side effects of just being like a PC, essentially, with a less, I mean, I don't know how well optimized that would be, but none of the real benefits that were potentially in the works. Like, I mean, I think this might not be, the way the console market's going, this sudden sharp increase in pricing, I feel like the traditional model is going to be under threat. I think Sony's going to find out, and I think with Microsoft as well, like selling that original vision at a high price, it makes it easier to swallow that high price when you're getting a flexible device, right? That's not inherently reliant on specific support from third parties. Because the whole point was that the developers are creating PC games that are also going to just work on Xbox, right? I mean, so which that makes it a lot easier for everyone. In a sense. So I don't know if they end up with some sort of like weird split model where like they went so far in this direction and now they're shifting back to this direction, but it doesn't really do either thing at its, you know, optimal. I don't know. We'll see.
It's all really, really tricky because I just don't really understand where they're going now. I mean, say what you like about the stuff that Phil and Sarah were saying. It kind of made sense, right? Because they went toe-to-toe with Sony in terms of like following a very, very similar model. Subsidized console, where they basically earn back the money from game sales, from subscriptions, that kind of thing. It didn't work out that particularly great for them. They tried the Game Pass model where, you know, basically... it's sort of a subscription venture, if you like. It worked to an extent. I mean, if they've still got like 30 million subscribers, and let's, you know, be quite conservative on this, there's like $10 for every subscriber on average. It's probably higher than that. You know, that's still $300 million of revenue every month. So, you know, you can't really call that a failure, I don't think. But
no.
It's you know, it's basically, well, actually, we need to have Game Pass on PC as well. So it kind of like becomes the direction of travel is that Microsoft just ends up being a mega publisher with all of these games, which is exactly what it is, right? So we've had that comment recently from Sean Layden, ex of Sony, saying you can either be a platform or you can be a publisher, but you can't be both. And I kind of think that the original plan was kind of like trying to be both, but skewing more towards the publisher side. You know, basically having a home piece of hardware, but you're still trying to get those games to as many gamers as possible. That strategy now, I think, is effectively dead. The problem that, and obviously now with the current situation, affordability is key. The problem is that the previous vision for Helix, which can't really be changed, is that it was designed to be this, you know, sort of super high-end premium device. In terms of console, but probably would have been super, super affordable compared to a pre-built PC. That was my take on it. But now, you know, the signs that are coming back from Microsoft's new management is basically, well, actually, we kind of like the idea of being a console-based platform, just like Xbox used to be back in the day, and it's the future. And it's like, well, how? You know, they can obviously they want to razor focus the game releases that are exclusive to that platform. For Xbox, but I still don't think it's enough. And you know, ultimately, you're still producing on PC. It's weird. I don't really understand where they're heading with this. But if it is going to be subsidized hardware, I guess at least it will be cheaper. But you'll end up paying for it, you know, via a continuation of platform fees and game sales. I don't know. It's a weird one. Anything to add to that, Oliver?
Not too much. I just think that it's a curious situation, and I am in complete agreement with John. But if you take the PC, right, if you take the Xbox as PC vision, and you strip out third-party storefronts, I lose enormous interest in what that will look like. I really do, because playing Steam games on a next-generation Xbox is kind of interesting, even if I don't fully agree with the vision of that console, and I think it would probably not be as exciting to me as, like, a fully-fledged next-generation Xbox console. But if you're combining the instability of a PC running on Windows, the issues that poses for games, with the idea that you're going to be locked to a single storefront, that is, like, a really unexciting and unappealing vision to me, and I really hope that's not what Microsoft does, because I think that's, like, the worst of both worlds, in my opinion. So I hope that, I think it's probably too late to ship. I don't know, depending on the degree to which they lock it down, maybe they could deliver something more akin to a next-generation Xbox console, more in line with Xbox Series, but, I mean, who knows at this point. I'm really curious to see what it will look like, though, given these seeming shifts in strategy from current Xbox management.
You know, it's an interesting one, because if they're going to basically rerun a strategy that's similar to like PS4 versus Xbox One, I don't really rate their chances. They will have better hardware, but we've reached the point now, as we saw with the last generation, where ultimately you still end up playing the same games that look pretty much the same. So, you know, the amount of investment that's gone into Magnus Silicon over the PlayStation 6 Silicon won't really pay off in the way they hope it will. I mean, Magnus made sense to me in terms of like being a big processor, because it was designed also to be a PC, right? So you needed to compete with that audience as well. Are they still doing that? Who knows? It's a crazy time there. Strategizing on the hoof, as it were, this late in the day, it's really, really dangerous. I'm really curious to see what they've got. I guess the other thing, of course, is the question as to whether they'll actually subsidize it at all, because, you know, they're talking about innovative models there, and they've talked about hardware partners. So, you know, it could be the case that they produce a reference console, a reference design, and then, you know, if you want an Xbox, you might be buying an Asus one or an MSI one or whatever. Very, very interesting. But yes, the viability of the model is going to come down to the strategy, and everything is to play for. It's just we've got no real idea, based on this changing management, what that's going to be. Let's move on. Question here from Daniel Kilpatrick. Hello, lovely lads of the Foundry. Is me hoping that Project Helix will still have an optional disk drive unrealistic? I'm hoping for Xbox to still have it as an option, even if the physical version costs more to cover manufacturing costs. So, John, we, you know, between us, we'd kind of written off physical media on Xbox for next generation, like years ago, I think, probably. Has your opinion on that changed?
Largely, no. Like, I don't think that's like part of their strategy at this point. They've been focusing on pushing people away from that towards Game Pass and other digital options. And Microsoft as a company, of course, that's where they want to go. The only way I could see the change, and I don't think it will, just total out of the side, is like, based on how reactionary Sharma seems to be so far, right. Just like making like what feels like rash decisions from the outside, they may not be. That's just external observation. I could see a scenario where they're like, well, Sony just did this and everybody's pissed. Let's go ahead and put the disk drive back in or something. You know what I mean? This, like, I really don't know. It would be an interesting gambit, though, if they did that. I don't think it would really matter because they've conditioned the Xbox audience away from that, but it would be interesting to see them take advantage of Sony's stumbles, basically.
I just think it's basically the future for them in terms of handling this transition is disk to digital even. And if the what we've heard about this so-called Project Positron comes to pass, at least somebody has a plan for handling this transition, because right. We've heard nothing from Sony beyond three paragraphs. So, yeah, I think that would probably be the Xbox strategy. And I think it's a winning one if, you know, your competition is sitting there on their thumbs, not telling you whether, you know, here's the thing, right? You can buy Wolverine on PlayStation 5 on disc. Question is, if you buy it on disc, will you be able to play it on your PlayStation 6? Who knows at this point? Nobody knows. Know. At least with the Positron strategy, it's the case. Well, you know, if you've got a disc, you'll have a seamless transition into the digital area, and we'll look after you in that respect. Although, of course, the recent stuff that's happening online about people having their Microsoft accounts cancelled arbitrarily with no means to get it back just reminds us of how tenuous the digital account is and the dangers associated with it. But Oliver, what do you think of the optional disk drive? Kind of sort of like something you might want, but probably not going to happen.
Yeah, I hope it does have some kind of disk drive attachment, but I'm not hopeful. And ultimately, I do think the way they're going to address the disk market is with the Positron, the disk to digital program. But I think that will probably require an Xbox Series X console, or maybe, I don't know, Xbox One, who knows. But it's going to require a console with a disk drive. And in theory, you know, I know that this is not really what John would like and what a lot of people would like, and I acknowledge it's a really imperfect solution for people who do like disc games. But in theory, if you do use that console to move your games over to next generation system and you don't sell those games, you don't lose those entitlements, maybe you could even sell your Series X, you know, you could port those games over. And I think that's probably a more positive vision at the moment than what Sony seems to be offering, I guess. I don't know. I still think that the best way for them to go about it is to ship some kind of disk drive attachment for next generation Xbox, even if that disk drive does not necessarily attach to the unit very neatly, even if that disk drive is very vestigial in nature. This disk-to-digital stuff it does seem to be the way that Microsoft is going, though, and at least it does offer some accommodation for people who do have large physical libraries, which is something that I don't know that we're necessarily seeing a similar vision from Sony, although it's obviously too early to tell there.
Yeah, an optional drive would be good. You know, just like one of those sort of USB attachments would do the job just fine, right? Something a bit more elegant, like the PlayStation current gen solution, would be nice. I think one of the issues that's been brought up in the past, which has merit to it, is that actually sourcing optical drives is a bit challenging at the moment because the demand for them has dropped off. So therefore, fewer of them are made, which means that a company like Microsoft, unlike Sony that can make them, they kind of have to pay market rate for them. So yeah, I think ultimately, though, it is still going to be some sort of big transition point where it's like, okay, this is happening. Maybe you don't like it, but, you know, you'll at least be able to take your games with you. Let's move on. I've got a couple of questions here. I've grouped them together. This one from Tony Escobar. Was Game Pass a failure? Is it possible to sway Sony by cancelling PlayStation Plus? Sharing John's feelings at the moment. Slomar says, now that I stepped back to premium and changed stores to Mexico, I'm wondering what the point is too. There's too many sales and free games. My backlog features most of the same games. Why pay when I can barely keep up anyway? I'm kind of curious about this stepping back to premium and change stores to Mexico. I'm assuming this is some sort of subscription hack or a way to get cheaper games. John, what do you think about this this whole thing at the moment? First of all, I think Tony Escobar here is basically saying, I don't know, two things seemingly. First of all, was Game Pass a failure? I think, well, that's a whole can of worms, isn't it? But is it possible to say it's sway Sony by cancelling PlayStation Plus? I think that's basically part of the protest movement that's sprung up in the light of Sony's announcement here, which is basically to revenue starve Sony. Do you think it's going to happen?
Man, I don't think it's possible. I don't know. It doesn't feel possible to sway them, these types of things. It's just, this is the type of decision that's so big, I feel like it's too late at this point. But also, we can never lose hope. And hitting them financially is not a bad move in that regard, right? Like, if enough people are actually rising up against it, it's not going to necessarily change their minds, but it could potentially alter the future, shall I say. Like, people say, oh, internet people, like, none of this stuff matters, not important, blah, blah, blah. I disagree. I think Microsoft would disagree. You mess up with the internet at large and customers at large like that, and it can haunt you. And it absolutely did with Xbox One, right? And I do think the internet reaction to all of that played a huge role in that scenario. I think Sony can go too far and anger enough people. I don't think discs being removed alone will matter. I do think that the high price is going to contribute to it, presuming that's what it's going to launch at. I think this combination of removing an option, really high price, is going to result in people that are, one, the hardcore people may choose not to support it because they're not happy with it, but then the less hardcore people may just not get into it due to cost, right? And be like, well, I can't afford this. I'm not going to get in on it. So I don't know. It doesn't seem good for them in that regard, but we'll see. Like, you know how these businesses go.
Well, from my perspective, this works in two directions, right? Because certainly the strategy here from Sony seems to be about, quote unquote, optimizing revenue. You know, basically to get more money from
margins.
from the audience, right? But in the making that decision, they've obviously made the calculations, probably anticipated that people would be unhappy and have cancelled, but have come to the conclusion that ultimately, in the end, it's probably going to work and it's going to make them more money and that the outrage will die down. I do note, I just revisited the change.org Don't Kill the Disc campaign. It's 315,000 verified signatures, which is absolutely fantastic. 5,800 people signed today, but the momentum there is slowing down, right?
It is, and I think, Rich, though, that, and this is where I hope has an impact, is like, again, the hardcore people are the ones that care the most about this, and those tend to be the ambassadors for your new platform.
Yes, right?
You don't want to anger them, and I think that is a risk. There was also some other points raised recently that annoyed me thinking about it. So this Slomar mentioned change stores to Mexico, right?
Right.
And as it is now on PlayStation, every... like, account has to be associated with a different region, and it's kind of a pain in the butt to, like, pay and deal with multiple regions. And that sucks, because I realized, at least for myself, like, playing imported games is something I enjoy and do all the time, right? And not every game supports every language that you would want. And that creates potential problems down the line in terms of accessing this stuff. Like, it's still possible to buy from other marketplaces, but it can be quite annoying. It's not something they want you to do, and you definitely got to jump through hoops to do it. And that's another thing that sucks. I mean, obviously, again, as a company, they don't want that, but that puts a huge damper on things for me.
We actually put up a poll on our YouTube channel. We had 62,000 results. Basically, the question was this: are you considering moving from PlayStation to PC? 19%, no, I'm sticking with PlayStation. 27%, yes, I'm seriously considering it. 53%, I've already switched to PC. Now, the timescale of when that switch would have happened, it's probably not in the last couple of weeks, I think, to be clear. But what it does show is basically, certainly within our audience, it's kind of like, well, yeah, okay, PC probably is the platform I want to move towards, you know, in the fullness of time, when the time is right, and perhaps because the amount of games from Sony this generation hasn't been particularly prolific, the switch has already begun. The move away from PlayStation might have already begun. Or it might simply be that people have just looked at the responses here and just want to produce the most reactionary outcome. But it's even that is a reflection of consumer sentiment about the brand, which I don't think Sony should ignore. But, you know, based on everything we've seen so far, ignoring it does seem to be the strategy going forward, doesn't it? Let's move on to the next question. This one comes from Clockwork Mikan. Dearest smelters of silicon, with recent news making John express 2 weeks in a row that, quote unquote, this is the worst thing PlayStation or Xbox has ever done, Nintendo appears to be following Luigi's strategy of winning by doing nothing at all. is this a Luigi strategy? Anyway. With Nintendo seemingly the only remaining console platform holder that could remotely be considered ethical to their employees / consumer friendly, I thought it would be fun to ask what is the worst thing, i.e. business decision, Nintendo has ever done in DF's opinion. Bonus question, let's tempt the fates and ask what could Nintendo realistically announce in the near future that would cause John to say this is the worst thing Nintendo has ever done that would be of equal or greater damage to Sony and Microsoft's self-inflicted foot-targeted gunshot wounds. Excellent work with all your videos. Please stay strong / be in good health amid the recent industry setbacks! Exclamation point. Well, that's an interesting question, isn't it, John? Because it's interesting because it's really difficult to answer, whereas with Sony and Microsoft, it's actually very, very easy. And lo and behold, they've done it. So what could Nintendo do that would be the worst thing ever?
Well, I mean, as far as what they've done so far, that it's hard to say for sure, but I would probably start to look at some of the legal stuff they've done, some of the things they've done to people over the years. Right. Like, remember that Gary Bowser situation? Like, when you actually read up on how that went out, like, it's pretty vile. I don't know. I mean, I understand protecting your IP and all that, but the way that they approach this, I think, is too harsh. And they've been notoriously bad with community and fan projects and all that in a way that other companies have not. And again, I get it. They want to protect their IP, whatever. But there's a reason that Nintendo's legal force is always feared. So,
right.
But that's not that consumer facing necessarily. So if we're talking about decisions on that front, I mean, yeah, I'm not really offended by it, but like the Wii U is just in general was a pretty gigantic blunder. Personally, if I had to say, I never liked that like Blue Ocean Wii stuff they went for. Like, I like the Wii, but things like Wii Music and all those types of games like that, I really didn't like those. I still don't really like those. And it's just a period of time in Nintendo's history where like I just have no real interest in those games. Like, I'm not mad at them, so it doesn't actually like make me angry or anything. It's just like I don't have any interest in playing these things, and I don't collect for it. That era of Nintendo games, just it's not my thing.
I don't think you could answer the question, John, because that's just basically they tried to make some games. It didn't particularly put work out for you.
I really, in terms of just
what could they do then?
I think you've
actually got a really good point with some of the legal shenanigan stuff that they've done there, and also they're kind of they really were testing the limits of trying to get emulation banned.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I mean. All the legal stuff they've done over the years. There's a lot of stuff in there I really don't like. So that's not great.
But it's difficult, right? Because you don't have wide scale layoffs with Nintendo.
Right, right.
It just doesn't happen. They are good with physical media.
Yeah.
They could have.
I was going to say, the Wii U, like I said, yeah, it was a failure, blah, blah, blah. But when you actually think about it, there's still a lot of amazing games released for it. So it's not like the failure of a platform can be thrown as like, oh, this is a huge thing that they did that's terrible.
And it wasn't an anti-consumer thing. You know,
no, not at all.
Thing. Yeah. I'm enjoying this question because we can't really answer it. Oliver, do you have any particular insights here on what Nintendo has done or could do that would be anything like what Sony and Microsoft have done?
Insights would be a strong word, Rich, but I do have opinions. I do have opinions. I think for me, just in terms of decisions that I didn't like, not that were bad decisions, but things I didn't like, the Revolution, aka the Wii. the Wii, not in terms of the financial performance of the Wii, because obviously the Wii was very successful, but just for me personally, I mean, motion controls were not my bag. I think they're a bit of a flash in the pan, did not work out that well long term, not that comfortable ultimately. Technically, obviously, it wasn't very compelling. Famously, I think a developer described it as two GameCubes duct taped together. That was kind of accurate in some respects, at least in terms of clock rates and whatnot. It basically was that. And I kind of checked out that generation to a large degree. I did check out, I mean, I had a Wii. I played the Super Mario Galaxy games and some other premier titles, but I didn't buy that many Wii games. I actually preferred the Wii U, to be honest with you. Like, I played more Wii U titles, probably in the end, than I did Wii titles. And looking back, it also causes issues for the legacy of Nintendo software, which is a shame because I love Nintendo software. But when you look at a Wii game and you're trying to adapt it for a current generation system, like you're trying to create a Switch 2 port or something, the control question, motion controls, things like this, all get in the way of shipping that title. So you end up with these kinds of imperfect solutions, like maybe you use gyro to approximate the motion control functionality, or maybe you use the touchscreen to approximate some, you know, pointer functionality like we see in the Super Mario Galaxy games. That's okay. It's not great. We also see similar compromises in titles like Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword. Again, not great. And if that software had just been designed on a controller to begin with, we wouldn't be having this issue, right, with those titles on platforms like the Switch. It's also a problem with platforms like the DS and 3DS, because obviously the Switch 1, Switch 2, they're not dual screen systems, causes issues for games, which is kind of a shame because I love a lot of those titles, but I know that they wouldn't play very well, at least without huge adaptation on a platform like the, you know, on a platform like the Switch. I mean, there are some titles that manage to do it, titles like the Ace Attorney Collection, where they basically go in and redo the entire interface. That's the way to do it. So I think it's unfortunate, not just because at the time I didn't like those systems, but looking back, I often can't play those games in a satisfactory form because the paradigms have homogenized around single screen, 12 button dual stick, and that's not really what the systems were about, right?
So it seems to me that we've got issues with their legal shenanigans. There was also their attempts to patent gameplay elements. But in terms of like stuff that's unethical, bad treatment of employees, bad treatment of consumer, I think we're coming up empty here, to be honest with you. And in actual fact, when you think about what Switch was doing, I mean, back in the day, Nintendo had two revenue sources, right? It had a handheld system and it would have a home console. They've actually rationalized that into one system now, which I'd say is very, very consumer friendly. So you don't have to buy the same game twice to play it on your screen at home and in handheld form. I think that's pretty cool. So it seems to me that maybe everybody should be buying Switch 2s. And with that, let's move on. Okay, so this question comes from Alan, the legendary Alan from the Discord. Hi, guys. Would it be better if everyone buys the physical code-in-a-box version of GTA 6 so they have a physical memento, but more importantly, Take-Two, PlayStation, and Microsoft receive less profit slash money than they would from a digital sale? This is sort of like, what do you think, John? Guerrilla tactics here.
I don't know about this. I mean, the only message it would send is like, yeah, we bought your game. Here's money. I don't know. Like, I don't think this would, I don't think they would read the numbers in a way. I don't think numbers could be influenced in a way to do anything on that front. Right.
Right. So
it's funny though. I'll give him that.
I'm just kind of amused by this concept of a physical memento. I mean, I guess it would be like a standard box.
It's like those cases you get for pre-ordering games back in the day or something. I don't know. Here's this empty box. Enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, everyone is still making a lot of money if you buy GTA 6, Alan. Yep. That's the bottom line. Slightly less money. I mean, they'll take it and they'll be happy and they'll be thankful for it. Oliver.
Yeah, I think if you're planning to stick it to the platform holders and publishers by buying a game that they profit off of, that's probably something they don't care about in their metrics. And it maybe also sends the wrong idea about, you know, whether you'll accept code in a box. Because, I mean, ultimately, what GTA 6 is it's a preview of the future starting 2028, when every single game at retail is just a little box with a code in it. And that's not really the future that I think people are interested in. Like, ultimately, a code in a box is not, I mean, a physical memento, sure, you'll have a case with nothing in it of value, right? I don't think that's the future that people are interested in, even if they do like having, you know, jewel cases up in their cabinets and things like that. I can understand that, but it just seems kind of fruitless, useless, futile. These kinds of words would describe that kind of approach, in my opinion.
The reason that maybe you should be considering the code in the box, bearing in mind the lack of alternatives, is that if it is like retailers that are selling the codes in boxes, then there could well be some kind of competition that sees the fact that you, as the end user, may actually see get the game for cheaper than it is on the PlayStation Store. So that's kind of like probably the best reason to consider the code in a box. Physical memento, though, I find that quite amusing for some reason. An empty box, yay. Okay, let's move on to our next question. And it is also the final one. This one comes from JL. Hi, DF. In the spirit of trying to talk about positive things, can you give me your quintessential PlayStation 3 experiences? What game would you like to see get the Assassin's Creed Black Flag resynced treatment? Well, that's an interesting question, Oliver, because you've just spent a lot of time with Black Flag Resynced, and if that sort of thing is going to happen, that's the way to do it, isn't it? It's just a fantastic release.
Yeah, I mean, at the outset, I wasn't totally sure what they were doing with it. I mean, it did not really seem to me like it was going to be the full-on remake treatment that we ended up seeing, basically. I mean, not literally a full-on remake, but close to it, at least in terms of the visual side of things, because, yeah, they did go through a place. All the assets add in tremendous new lighting systems, strand hair, cloth physics, crazy water tessellation, so many things to improve the visual experience that it looks like a totally new game. And in terms of PS3 titles that could apply to, I think there might be some overlap between my answer and John's, but I wouldn't mind seeing that treatment for the MotorStorm games, because all three are brilliant. All three are great technical showcases of what the PS3 could do. And yeah, visual remakes that preserve the kind of artistic intent of those games while substantially redoing models, assets, lighting, weather effects, adding things like ray tracing, temporal upscaling, all these kinds of things. I mean, that would be absolutely incredible. But I honestly don't think they would need that necessarily. Like, just simple ports would suffice. But I really hope that Sony looks at that series and maybe does something with it. Maybe something in the middle where, like, they do kind of like what Bluepoint did with the Uncharted games, with the Uncharted 1 to 3 collection there, Nathan Drake collection, where they went back and they kind of touched up some assets. Maybe they touched up some texture work, did some changes here and there to make it scale to higher resolutions, but they didn't go whole hog with like a full-on remake. But yeah, there are a lot of PS3 games that could benefit from that treatment. I mean, obviously the Uncharted Collection, Killzone 2, Little Big Planet titles, Metal Gear Solid 4, although obviously we're seeing Konami's going a bit of a different route with that one. Lots of games on PS3 that I'm a huge fan of that could see remixed, the infamous titles, Infamous 1 and 2, both very good games. But yeah, I would be very curious. I mean, the problem with these kinds of resynced approaches is that they're so labor-intensive. Like, they're more labor-intensive, I think, to produce the remake of Assassin's Creed Black Flag than to produce the original game in terms of man-hours and money, right? So this is not a trivial task, really, to approach an older title and actually give it this full-on treatment.
John?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of cool stuff on the triple, for sure. And a lot of it remains exclusive to the triple. Some of it, I think, could be translated over directly without, like, massively overhauling visuals. I mean, obviously, I'm always a Ridge Racer fan, so Ridge Racer 7 released on Switch 2, I think, as is, with, like, 4K rendering support for TVs, 1080p native on the screen, would be awesome and cheap. I think Namco should do it. You already mentioned MotorStorm, but I think all those games are great. But MotorStorm 1 in particular, I think visually holds up in a way that's like genuinely shocking. When you see it running on an emulator, especially with the ultra-wide patch and high resolution, you're like, man, you could release this today, like as is, and it would still be an attractive game, right? Like, they did such a good job with the artwork and just visual design in that game. I mean, the only thing I could say, like, you really want to improve is maybe like shadow resolution. But everything else, it's just gorgeous. It's still a beautiful game. Resistance, I think people always mention the Resistance games. I actually think Resistance 3 is the best of that bunch. And it feels like it's something that you don't hear people talk about. It just kind of disappeared and it's there. But it was a really beautiful game for PS3. And it had this like very active scenes, right? With a lot of secondary animations throughout every stage in a way that made it look super dramatic. I mean, Killzone, of course, as well. I would like to see Capcom bring back EX Troopers, which never got a Western release. I think you could just release that on Switch 2 and it would be cool. That was the anime cel-shaded spin-off of Lost Planet, by the way. Mm. But it's a really, really cool little game. I like that. Puppeteer, again, do a 60 FPS version of Puppeteer on a modern platform. No other visual changes needed. Just 60 FPS higher res would be amazing. It's still good. 3D Dot Game Heroes. That's another one. If you guys have played that, published by From Software, but it's basically like a Zelda 1 spiritual successor kind of game made with, it looks like it's made up of like voxels. Like it was made in Magic of Voxel or whatever. It's really, really neat looking, cool little game. And then a couple more. I like Folklore. I thought that was always a really underrated sort of like RPG action-y game. That's still really beautiful. And then there's Rain, or Lost in the Rain, depending on which version, which is I have the Asian physical release of that, and it's the most valuable game in my entire PS3 collection, often selling for like $600-$700 on the used market. Because there wasn't a lot of them. Because it was in the West, it was a digital-only game. But it got a disc release in Asia. So, but it's a really cool, it kind of, it's like a bit of a, like, Limbo, eco, sort of, like, cinematic platforming. But it relies on, like, rain as a mechanic. And it's a really atmospheric, cool journey. But yeah, I mean, that's just some games, but the triple, for all its flaws, like when I look back on the triple, I realized like all the good PS3 only stuff largely runs well and still looks good, right? All the problems that the PS triple had with performance and the reason why it was slogged off so often on Digital Foundry doesn't matter anymore because all those games are on PC, right? So it's like, who cares if it runs like crap on the PS3? Because you wouldn't want to play that version anyway. It's all the good stuff that's just on PS3 runs great and looks great. So that's kind of an interesting realization I had about the PS3's legacy. It's like the weak points no longer matter, basically.
Yeah, that's an interesting perspective. And you're quite right. I mean, you know, just going back to talking about Black Flag Resynced there, I think there is actually, an experience on PlayStation 3. Not sure it was quintessential. Was, you know, the original Assassin's Creed and the Ezio games, where things really started to come into their own. Yeah, I mean, you know, I guess the quintessential PlayStation 3 experience, having done most of the platform comparisons back in the day, was that it wasn't as good as the Xbox 360. And Assassin's Creed was like one of the original games where it was kind of like super, super apparent. But, you know, I still think there is, you know, the experience that Assassin's Creed offered back in the day was something new and exciting, right?
Hey, Black Flag itself is on the PS Triple.
Yes, of course. Yeah. Not that you'd want to play it there.
No.
But, yeah, so I think, you know, if the rumors are true and we're going to see the original game getting a resync treatment, I'm all for that because the settings there, which is fantastic. Similarly, you know, the consumer sentiment is basically to do what Sony is doing with God of War and basically amass all of the Ezio games into a single resynced release. I think that would be a brilliant way forward as well. But yeah, you know, it's funny. Well, I recently did the RPCS3 on PS5 Linux, and it was great to go back to all of those games that are sort of trapped on PlayStation 3 and experience them again for good or bad. And, you know, hopefully they will actually sort that out on PlayStation 6, that is, because they will have the horsepower to properly emulate PS3 at that point and, you know, deliver substantial graphical upgrades, which should be optional. But I guess for me, the quintessential PlayStation experience was probably Uncharted 2, which was, you know, just like absolutely, absolutely phenomenal. And but you can play that on PlayStation 4 at 60 FPS. Via Bluepoint. And expect to see patches for that, for hacked consoles, for that to be running at much higher resolutions.
But, also, maybe to our audience, would you guys ever like to see a video where we go back to the worst games on PS3 or 360, the ones that run like absolute garbage, and just look at them? Like Far Cry 3, that's always one of my favorites. Because it's
Shadow of Mordor?
It's so... Oh
yeah, that's a bad one.
We could probably do that. That would be interesting. Yeah, I noticed on a tweet I saw the other day that Far Cry 4 or maybe Far Cry 3, you know, even today's hardware, 5080 and 9800X3D, it's still only doing like 70 FPS.
Jeez,
it's nadir. Amazing. Yeah, people love to see bad games for some reason, so maybe we should consider it. Okay, right. Well, that was the last question, therefore the end of the show. So please do like, subscribe, share. If you enjoyed it, ring bells for this, that, and the other. DF supporter program at patreon.com/digitalfoundry. Lots of goodies for supporting the team there. But that's all from us on this one. Thanks for watching and supporting Digital Foundry, and we'll see you soon.